Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to The Labrish. This is Margaret Marshall, your host, and I'm coming to you live on Blog Talk Radio, Backyard Labrish. And we're here each Wednesday at 8 o'clock, where we celebrate, enlighten, and preserve the rich, diverse culture of Jamaica, land we love. And I want to welcome everyone to the show this evening. For those of you who know what we do on a Wednesday at 8 o'clock, and for those of you who might come by later and don't know, I'm just going to tell you, because we that grew up on the island, or if you visited the island, or if you're still on the island, you know how the trade winds come in at a certain time, just at twilight, and just blow softly across the island. So we can just get in that mode where we take a virtual trip, and whatever the problems of the day was or the stress of the day was, it's no problem, man, because we're back there in our favorite chair, whether we were on the roof in the good old days, on the beach recently, or in the backyard underneath a fruit tree. So we're there now, and we're relaxed, and we're going to be entertained, because what we do here in the backyard is we get the seniors together, and we're making some memories, living history, talking about the days that was when we grew up on the island and things we did. Because nobody's writing about us right now. The young people are writing about themselves. So we're making our own history here. And I want to thank all the listeners who have called in to join me, those that are listening online, and those who may come by later on. Because this evening I'm quite excited, since I started this series, which is entitled Education in the 40s and 50s, The Way It Was, I have met some very interesting seniors who are happy to share their memories, hoping that it will be an inspiration for the now generation or the generations to come long after we're gone. So without any further ado, I'm going to tell you a little bit about our very special speaker this evening, in case you're not on my list of forgetting the promotion. And if you aren't, you need to get to my website, which is backyardlabrish.com, and send us a little note that you'd like to be added to the list. And I do only send out promotions about who the speaker will be. I don't spam you. So let me just tell you, I've had the pleasure of meeting a delightful and charming senior who's going to be our guest tonight, and she has a very unusual name because I cannot remember hearing that first name before. Perhaps, you know, I don't remember much. You remember I'm a senior. So we're talking this evening with Mrs. Raphaelita Smith. And I would be interested if she would share with us if she knew how she came up with that name. And I think she has an interesting middle name, too. But she has such an interesting history. First of all, she celebrated her 80th birthday already. And she has wonderful memories going back even to her elementary school. And she was blessed to be educated in different parts of the island and have a variety of passions that she has pursued in her career. So I'm hoping she's on the board and will hit one on her telephone so I can see she's on and ready to share with all of us about some of these passions. I don't see a hand going up yet, so then I'll continue to tell you a little bit more about her. I hope she hasn't forgotten. 1 week, you know, if you'll all remember, one of my guests, it slipped his mind. He'll never forgive me. I haven't forgiven him yet, but I'm sure he'll come back on. She's here, and I see her hands up. So let me open up the mic to, and incidentally, she's lovingly called Miss Jenny. So welcome. Good evening. Your mic is open. Hello? Hello, Miss Raphaelita, did you hit one on your phone? Okay, well, I have an open mic at 954-583. So if you intended to hit one on your phone, would you say hello to me, please?
Hello, my greetings, Carl.
Oh, hi, Carl. Welcome back. How are you today?
I'm wonderful.
Oh, great. Great. Well, thanks for coming to listen in. I'm waiting on my guest. I hope she'll be here shortly.
Okay.
I spoke with her about 20 minutes ago, but let me just tell you a little bit about her.
Mm-hmm.
She was born in Negril, and you know, most, I think almost everybody that take a vacation any part of the world will perhaps know that name, Negril, because if I may say so myself, perhaps the most beautiful beach in the world. So that's where she was born. I haven't spoken to anybody before that was born there. And Carl, could you help me out here? Because I'm just learning my history now.
Mm-hmm.
So, and as I rattle off each week and read the history of Jamaica, I get so excited. But over the almost 3 years, I've shared so much information that I don't even know what parish Negril is. Is it St. James?
Westmoreland.
Oh, it's Westmoreland. Oh, my cousin and I could not figure out whether it was Westmoreland or St. James.
That's different.
So, she was born in Westmoreland, the city of Negril, and in speaking to her, she was telling me some fascinating stories of what she remembered that happened way back in her day. She left there when she attended the elementary school there in Negril, and her family was relocated to Frome, where her dad was the chief sugar boiler in the new central factory built by the West Indian Sugar Company. And I want to just make an interesting tidbit.
That's a dollar number.
Yes. What happens is I went online and see if I could Google some history on the West Indies Sugar Company as it relates to Frome. And a lot of people from Westmoreland and that area know about that company and Frome. And there's not much written at all about, you know, there is history about the West Indies Sugar Company itself, because they were all over, not only in Jamaica, during the slave trade when sugar was king. But I'm saying that to say how important it is now that we have this wonderful medium of the internet and things living in the cloud forever and ever, I suppose, that we can make our own. talk about things that we know that are facts to us. I'm going to close the mic for a minute because I think Carl has some background. And I'm asking my guest tonight, Ms. Rafaelita, if you are online, would you on the board, would you please just hit one on your telephone so I can open up the mic to you. In the meantime, let me give you a little more history about this special lady. Oh, here she is. I see a hand up. So that must be her. So let me welcome 561-278. Good evening. Your mic is open. Welcome to the backyard. This is Margaret.
Hi there, Margaret. I'm here listening to you.
Oh, great. I'm telling you, you sound like you're 16.
Huh? No.
I said your voice sounds like you're 16.
Oh, my God. People tell me my voice is so young. It's a blessing.
It is. I can't believe you celebrated your 80th birthday.
80 years and 7 months now. Or
That's
six, whatever.
Wonderful. Well, congratulations.
Yeah.
We're really
you.
Blessed to have you online with us this evening, and I want to welcome you. And I was talking about your unusual name because I personally, I have not heard that name with a Jamaican country girl before.
Well,
if I may call you that.
May I tell you how I came by it?
Please.
My father was a reader. I got it from him. And he was reading Raphael Sabatini at that time, you know, the Scarlet Pimpernel and the King's General and stuff like that.
Uh-huh.
And he was so in love with Raphael Sabatini that if I had been a boy, I would have been Raphael. But being a girl, he had to feminize it, so I became Rafaelita.
Wow. Roughly
translated Little Raphael.
that is so precious.
Mm-hmm.
So you have fond memories of your dad, huh?
Oh, my dad was, oh, God, listen to me. I'm ashamed of myself now at the age of 80. My father is still the most handsome man I know, the most erudite man I know, the kindest. He was great. He was really great. But let me tell you something. He was not much over 5 feet tall.
Really?
He was short, but my mom was average size, so she towered over him.
Well, let me just ask you this question, because I know a lot of people, especially we seniors, we don't know. Do you know how your mother and father met? Were they from the same district?
No. Huh. My father came from the Indian village of, they call it Peter Plain or something like that, which was behind Grangehill, approximately 10, 15 miles from Negril. But he was working in the sugar industry, so he only came home to that area out of crop. My uncle, that's my grandmother's brother, being very adventurous, went and opened a business grocery shop in that area where there was a sugar plantation, but they didn't make sugar. They only grew the cane. And so he had this shop because it served a big area. So my mom, who might have been about 18, 19, went to keep house for him, and that's where my father saw her. And I guess he admired this nice, tall, dark, sambo lady. I don't know. But
wow.
He approached my uncle, and my uncle went home to my grandmother and great-grandmother, and he had rosy stories of this man. So, the old system, they invited him to come one Sunday, but she didn't know who this man was, so he and a couple of his cousins and so on turned up. And they had, you know, not dinner sitting at table like what we would have now. They had food cooked and neighbors there and everybody because the man was coming to court Winnie. So everybody had to look at him, you know, and pass judgment on him.
Wow.
So,
do you have any idea what year that was?
I can only imagine it must have been somewhere in 19, let me say, 28, 29, somewhere there, because they were married 29 and I was born 30. They were married August 29, so it must have been 28 all that was taking place for the marriage to be arranged, and he had to go back to work one crop. I think he was in Trelawney. Then he came home and they got married in August.
Ah.
And,
are you the first?
First child for them, yes. Mama's first, his second.
Mm-hmm.
So that was it. But she went to Trelawney with him. And she, well, of course, it was the first she was leaving home away from that little stint with her uncle. And it was so different because there was no sea. And, you know, totally different because he was working at a sugar factory. I think it was Green Park or something. And only hills and cane fields and so forth. Alien situation to her.
Oh, yes. And that's where you were conceived.
Apparently. But she went to Christmas now. No, there was the owners of that sugar plantation were a Mr. and Mrs. Mouchette. I think they were English. I'm not dead sure. But Mrs. Mouchette took this young bride under her keeping. So my mom learned to make English roast beef and what kind of pudding? Yorkshire pudding.
Yorkshire pudding, yes, yes.
English
yes.
plum pudding. She learned to bake and very British everything. And so the Christmas of 1930, she is going home because she was pregnant now, and she's taking all the fandangles with her and idea of Christmas celebration, different from, for ours, Christmas was just religious, church and so forth, at that time at least. So she was there, I don't know what the hell she was doing, excuse me, but she fell off a chair, and that started labor.
Ah.
That's why, how come I was born at Negril, you see?
I got you. She wasn't really living in Negril.
No, she was supposed to be in Trelawney, but she went home for the Christmas and fell off a chair. That's the story I got. And that she wasn't too well. So I was born on the 28th.
That
sounds
interesting.
Yeah. So
yes.
I always say I was born within sight and sound of the Caribbean. And then I say I was born in my grandmother's thatched cottage, nearly on the beach, because, you know, you just walked up to the beach. But it was such a beautiful place, oh, my Lord. Yeah. So that's
and
the
of
story
course
of my birth.
They only have a lot of hotels now.
No,
so
they
what
didn't
memory
have,
do you have? That, have you been back to Negril recently?
The last time I was there was 2008. I haven't
uh-huh.
been since that. But I can tell you, I was down there about 2001. I came back here in 2001. I was down there when my mom got sick and I was there with her when she died. Because they, after all their adventures over the island, they retired back to Negril. So we always had a home in Negril, regardless of where we were. And my boys, for example, spent all their school holidays at Negril, and so they got some of what I had. But they were there during the construction and the building, so they have sort of both pictures. But at that time, there were no hotels, no guest houses. The beach from where we call Negril Square, from right at that river, straight up the beach was 5 miles. And we knew the name of every family that lived there. Then you got to what is called North Negril Point, and there's a little island, Booby Key, just about 2 or 3 chains across. But when you go around the curve, it's another piece of beach, and it's called Bloody Bay. And the story is, it was one of the last battles between the English and the Spanish for possession of Jamaica was fought there. The British were victorious, they sank these Spanish galleons. But even when I was a child and you had a rough sea, not really a hurricane, just a storm, things were washed up on the beach. People would find coins and jewelry and stuff. Yeah. So Bloody Bay, that was that was definitely a sad. Near the, on the southern shore at Bluefields, which was then called Oriston, there was another, I think that's where they captured Calico Jack, this pirate, and the two women pirates. You know about Calico Jack and Mary Read and what, Annie Bonnie?
I did story of that. That's what one is on the Blog Talk Radio about that story.
All right. Yes. So it was down at Bluefields that they captured them. So we have a lot of history and historical background thereabouts. But that beach at Negril is one of the most beautiful. But, you know, it's so different now because when did it start? We just started seeing, actually, when you stood up, you would look, you saw the white, creamy sand, the curve. Behind that, the green coconut trees all the way up.
Mm.
You couldn't see any houses or anything, just this beach and trees. But the houses were behind the trees. And then one by one, there's a disease called lethal yellowing, killed every single coconut tree.
Wow.
A few people replanted. I think they got one called, oh God, what is it called? Panama something another. But it's one that they developed to be resistant to the lethal yellowing. But they don't grow very tall. So our place at Negril still has a few of those new trees. Because but the tall trees were all killed off. So because the coconut formed part of the livelihood of the people, because they would use the coconuts to make oil,
mm-hmm.
and they fed their animals on the coconut trash, and you know, when the coconut went, sort of the livelihood of some women went. And even caring for the animals, they couldn't afford to buy feed, to feed pigs and so on. So, you know, that was about when people started coming in to buy land. So they sold up their land. Some went to England because, remember, during the war, a lot of them, World War II, a lot of men had gone to war.
Right.
So they had some connections in England. A lot of them came and took back their families, or the sons would go or so on. So we had a kind of migration from there. Mm-hmm. They sold up the lands on the beach, and that's how the hotel people came in. But you
I
know,
got you. But you mentioned that your brother still lives in Negril.
Yes,
so
my brother
still
lives
family.
There. Mm-hmm.
Oh, wonderful.
He's still down there. The old house that Dad had built had to be, it was sort of more or less destroyed with Hurricane Gilbert. That's 88, I think it was. Yeah, Gilbert. So they built another house over the, what's on the same spot, and that one is still there. But my brother doesn't live down there. It's too noisy and too busy. He's up on the hill. But he's there, and the body goes, just ask for him, and they find him.
All right. Yeah. Well, tell us, you mentioned here that you attended elementary school in Negril. Do you remember?
Yes, we started, there was just one school. We had two churches, the Anglican Church, nearer the sea, and but it's the same range of hill, and the Presbyterian Church, more inland. And the school was built on church land because you had to walk past the school to go up to the Presbyterian man's. And the head teacher had some connection with the church, taking services or playing the organ or something. So there was a tie-up, but I really don't know. And I think the minister of the church, the head person, Savlamar, would visit the school ever so often, you know, and come and pontificate a little bit and so on. So it might have been called a church school at the time, but I'm not really sure. But I know it was on the premises of the church. It's no longer on that. It's now on government land where the former police station was. That's the area it is now. But at the time, to me, at that age, it might have looked very big and the kids were big. But looking back, I don't think there were more than about 80 or so children in school. But
well, that was a lot in those days.
Could have been, too, because you must understand that people in Jamaica everybody, no matter how poor, the children must go to school, they must get an education. Very few children wore shoes to school, but it didn't matter because most people were bare, in bare feet. And we had uniform. I remember it was like a navy blue skirt and a white blouse. They were all, and the boys were khaki. And they were always neatly dressed because the parents took pride in seeing that their kids went to school. And I remember all our books came from England, Royal Crown readers. So believe me, I knew more British poems than I voiced it on the burning deck whence all but he had fled, you know. And we would that was one. I remember that one. And everybody saying, we say, what, you have to be obedient? Of course, later on we said, no. The mother and child would not stand there for the ship to sink with him. He would have found a way off like everybody else.
Well, would you like to share your memory gem or poem that you remember?
From those days? Oh, God. So I'll tell you one silly one. When I was, I don't know, must have been in the first grade or what, I don't remember, but we had a concert. But I must have, I think first grade, because we were all lined up on the platform, and it was the alphabet. And my part was, I was an Italian who had a white mouse. Oh. But, so that must have been in the first grade. But we had concerts like very often, maybe once a month, I don't know. But the whole village comes to the concerts because there was, remember, there were no televisions.
Right.
People, that was entertainment. When the church had a cantata, everybody came. And everything
well,
was
you know, packed. Some of the listeners that come by to listen to Backyard Labrish don't know what a cantata is.
Oh,
so
God.
Would you just tell us what a cantata was then?
Okay. It's what, like, we would call it a concert. You had people singing, reciting, reading interesting things. We had choir singing a chorale or a person performing on the organ, and it was that. But sometimes, now we had a pageant, which was like an Easter pageant or a Christmas pageant, when they would perform the whole, whether the crucifixion or the birth of Christ. And that, I mean, for rural community, they built the background thing. You know, really went a lot of effort went
right
into
you
it.
You even had
and
a set at that time, yes.
No, we didn't have anything. You had to make everything that you wanted.
That's what I mean. They made it.
You had to make
they
everything.
They were creative.
And but we always had these pageants. And then another big thing was East was harvest. Every church had harvest festival. The people brought in fruits and vegetables. They used the sugar cane to make arches in the church. They had a special service for the children who took up their baskets. And these were real fancy baskets with used tissue paper and covered like a shoebox and put a little handle. And they would put whatever. Some had like eggs and stuff. Some families made a cake or so on. Or you had fruit, whatever the offering was. And all the children would march up and give their gifts at the altar. And they had an appropriate song. Then the Monday, they had the sale.
It would be Easter Monday.
No, it's harvest is, no.
Oh,
harvest
oh, oh,
is Easter,
so harvest is not at Easter time necessarily.
No. Harvest is down to near the autumn, somewhere like August. Yeah. And they would sell the stuff, and the money went to the church. For repairs and upkeep. But harvest was a big thing. But I tell you something, I had my older sister, she was very, very arty, crafty. One year, she made her harvest basket, not with the usual tissue paper. She folded star apple leaves. You know, the star apple leaf on one side is green, and the other side, it looks goldy. Goldish brownish color. Well, she folded them like a little buttonier and sewed them over each other so they were like overlapping scales. It was
wow.
so beautiful. And she got moss, the moss that grow around trees, and put
uh-huh.
with it. It was beautiful. But I'll tell you something. Every church that was having a harvest wanted us there because Mama Dad made me a beautiful basket, heart-shaped and da-da-da. So the two of us were at every harvest. It wasn't funny. We were
wow.
Presbyterian
well, I can
harvest.
See the joy in your voice.
It was
as
so
you
funny.
All these memories.
Yeah, of course. Nothing like that happens today. Could I tell my grandchildren about walking up with a basket with fruit?
Oh, I know.
It's a red
but
holiday.
You know, I'm sure that when the time comes, they will be in really thrilled to hear your story.
I hope so. I hope so. But now,
so now,
funny enough,
so that
I was
covered the elementary years, and then you went to Frome. So what
yes.
happened there?
Okay, that what happened up to that time, sugar was made by small estates. I have no idea of how many acres, but you had several, because I can remember Frome, Fontebel, Belisle, Petersfield, George's Plain, different ones. Each one grew sugar cane. Each one had a place where they ground the cane. I think it was like a mill, and cows or horses or mules went around, and something, some wheel is turning and something is crushing the cane, and the juice runs into a copper. And we have found a lot of these huge copper pots. When I say huge, I can't tell you how many gallons they are, but you could easily stand in one of them. Well, they had those huge pots to boil the juice until it became sugar. But the sugar wasn't dry. It was a damp sort of sugar. They didn't even call
wet
it sugar.
Sugar.
We call it wet sugar, but that's it.
Yes.
And then they had special kind of hogshead barrels to put them in. And it went all the way to England to be refined and sold back to us in the colonies for much
uh-huh.
more than we paid for the wet sugar. So...
Right, right.
Oh,
and
no.
the web sugar was so delicious. I remember
well,
the web sugar.
People still
go
make web sugar. If you go to certain places in Jamaica, you can get web sugar. And some country markets still sell web sugar.
Oh,
anyhow,
really?
Yeah.
I didn't know
company,
that.
It was Tate and Lyle. I know that's the name
uh-huh.
I remember. But this company, West India Sugar Company, was formed out of some other previous company. But Tate and Lyle were the chief stockholders. And they had the bright idea of building central factories that would produce the sugar that they are sending back from. Because up to that time, Jamaica could not make dried sugar as we know it. So they came and they bought up all these little estates. And so they stopped making sugar. They only produced cane. And all the canes were sent, in our case in Westmoreland, to Frome. And in Vere, they had a factory at Monymusk. And all the cane from St. Catherine and thereabouts was sent to that factory. And that factory is a huge construction where the cane went in and the mills that had to go through about three or four different mills each set of mills grinding it finer and getting
fine,
out more
yes.
juice. Then the juice goes to somewhere else and is strained. Then it goes to the vacuum pans. That's where my father comes in. And these huge pans, bigger than a room, and there would be like four or five of them on. They called it the pan floor. And it had a little window and a little thing. So all I could tell you every now and then, he would press something and slide in a glass, and when it comes out, he would test how much, whatever is the word, I would say granulating, I don't know if that's the correct word, when the molasses is being boiled into sugar. And
uh-huh.
sometimes if it's not doing it properly, he might know that it needs something to be added. Don't ask me if it's potash or what, but that was where his expertise came in. Then when the
uh-huh.
sugar grains are properly formed, that now is let off into another huge thing called a centrifugal something which spins, and that spins out the liquid which becomes a syrup. And the, when it's finished spinning, the sugar is as dry as anything, and the crystals are there. Then it goes and they come down and they have the bags ready to catch, and they fill the bags and sew them up or whatever they do, and they put on the truck and take to the wharf in Savlamar. But we were walked through the whole process time and time again. And the part where, oh, the part where the rum was made, now that's a different story. Because
all right. So you went to school in Frome too?
No,
did
Frome
you?
Didn't have a school, no. The nearest school, one was at Grangehill, which was about 3 miles away, and the one at Georgespleen was a mile away. We went to the Georgespleen school. Because
so where is Georgespleen? What parish?
It's all of I'm talking about is Westmorland.
Oh, you're still in Westmorland.
Yeah. Georgespleen, you leave Frome, you go to Georgespleen, and you go on down to Savlamar. But it's so flat, people walk, people went by mule carts, people went by donkeys and horses and eventually bicycles. When people could buy bicycles, every child had a bicycle. So we all rode to school after a time. But in the earlier part, we all walked to school.
Wow. So most of your years then in terms of elementary school was in Georgespleen.
Yes, because I was at Negril for only maybe one full year. I can't really remember how long I was here. Then we went to Frome, so I was at Georgespleen. I know I was in second class and third, and I started fourth, but I got the scholarship to Mannings. So I went off to Mannings. I didn't stay at Georgespleen more. It wasn't quite 3 years I was there.
So then how you got to school when you got went to Mannings?
To Mannings, okay. They had to be boarded in Savlamar. Children from outside were boarded at first. But when it got into the bicycle era, we could all ride bicycles. The land is flat. Not much traffic. So, I mean, at one time, there were about, I don't know about now, but in my days, there were about 5 bicycle racks, and each rack could hold 50 bicycles, because nearly every child had a bicycle. And
Children
rode from as far as, like, up on the hills with Thorn, and different places. Everybody rode to school. Petersfield, from every direction, because the land is really flat. It's Georgespleen.
Yes,
so
yes.
One of the
great, fantastic. Mm-hmm. Now, do you have any memory of how a school day would go then? Now, by this time, how old were you when you went to Mannings?
I went to Mannings, I think I was 10 plus, because what happened, Wisco gave scholarships, and the manager at Wisco went to my dad and said, send your daughter, we have given scholarships, let her go take it. And they said, but she's too young. Huh. Anyhow, I went and I got scholarship. So I went off sort of early, and I was at Mannings, second form. No, did we have a first? I guess I had a first form, second form, third. But I left during the fourth year of my fourth and went to Excelsior, where I also had to be boarded because that's in Kingston. And I think because my mother was working in Clarendon or something, so that's why I had to go to school where I could be boarded. And I stayed there, and I did my school certificate from there. And
Cambridge
school certificate, yes. But my English teacher, her husband was at Kingston College, and he got the job as principal at Mannings. And these are the two first black man and woman pair.
Do you remember their name?
Yeah, I'll tell you all about it, who became principal at Mannings. Now, when I went to Mannings, and the years before that, actually all teachers came from England.
Uh-huh.
But by the time I went there, we had Jamaican teachers, a few. But the principal and the assistant principal were English. The last one there was Mr. Newnham, and his second was Mr. Lee. I remember those two. And then He was succeeded by Mr. Mitchell, who was a Jamaican, what we call brown Jamaican man, but he had married an English woman, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then Prescott, now this master who was at Casey, when the job was advertised, he applied and he was well qualified. He was a Barbadian by birth, though, and he married Sybil Davidson, who was Jamaican, and he got the job. So, because I was her, you know, student, she knew that I was from that direction. So they went and asked my father if they would remove me back down there. Well, Daddy didn't really want to, but she said they wanted to start a sixth form there.
And at Manning's?
At uh-huh. Manning's, because we had never had a sixth form before. So that was the inducement. And between Mr. and Mrs. Prescott, I would be able to do English at they call it English advanced at that time. It was 3-point English, no? And I did that and got a distinction for that. So,
I see where you graduated with honors in English.
Yeah, so that was it. So I went back to Manning's then, and that was in 49, and had the exam December 50, so I graduated with the A-level. They call it A-level now. At that time, we called it higher school certificate. And from thence, my worldly career started. It launched my worldly career. Let's see.
Oh, that is wonderful. That is wonderful. So do you have any recollections of how a day in school would be?
Okay. Well, let me go back to Manning's in the early years. First thing, we went to the hall for prayers. You didn't start the day without prayers. We had prayers in the hall every morning. Then you went back to your classrooms. And there were like 2 or 3 subjects and then a break. And at that break, we either had milk or some snack or something. And then you went back until lunchtime. And then after lunch, we had games, but we had prep. You had to stay in for half an hour to do homework. So prep period was built into the timetable and games after that. But things like PE came into the day. You know, sometimes it might be 10 o'clock in the morning, one lot of kids are out doing PE or that kind of thing. But the games were in the evening after school. We also had guides for the girls. And the guide captain, oh, she was a delight. She was a little English lady. She worked at the Bank of Nova Scotia, and she was the guide captain. And, you know,
you're talking about the girl guides.
Girl guides. And
right.
We used to have paper chases. We used to go camping. And there was Miss Lee Cusack had a huge property, and there was a little river running through. The property was called Sweet River. So we always went to Sweet River for weekend camps because they would.
So when you went to camp, where did you sleep?
Oh, Lord, the great house had so many empty rooms because Miss Cusack is a spinster. She never married, so there was no family. Or I guess in the olden days, it would be all filled. So there's a lot of space, and we just threw mattresses down on the floor. Because remember, we didn't have air beds in those days.
right. Or air conditioning.
And then there was a river, Sweet River, that we could swim in. And we built bonfires. And we
Was it co-ed or was it just girls?
Just girls. For the camps, yes. The boys had scouts and later on they had cadets. But their things was different. We only meet in classrooms and on the games field and so on. And so we learned to associate with them. But you know what was funny? We didn't use Christian names.
Oh.
I was Smith, and there was a boy named John Smith. So he was Smith Primus, and I was Smith Secundus. And there were like 5 Tomlinsons. And Primus, Secundus, Tertius, da, da, da. So the last one was Quintus, and that name stuck with him. But the reason for that was that when we got to be big young people, it was easier for the boys to say Miss Smith.
Uh-huh.
If they've been calling you Smith all along. So it was just that. So that was really, I think that was part of it, that respectful thing, that uh-huh. they weren't romping and bawling out your first name and so on. But we used second, your surname. So we hardly, just girls would know Dorothy and Jenny and Maggie and so on. But as far as everybody else is concerned, it's Smith and Taylor and Allen and so on, you know.
Oh, that's very interesting, because I've never heard that before.
Mm-hmm. That was how it was. And we wore Jippy Japper hats, and so we had a hat room where when you got to school, you had to go and hang up your hat on a little peg. And the greeting, you know, how they say hi and so on. No. When you march up somewhere, and if there was one girl, you say lady, and she would say lady. And if there were several, you'd say ladies, and she would say lady, or they would say lady.
But that was greeting, like hello?
Yes, but we never know hello and hi. We didn't have that.
Right, you said lady and lady.
It was very, you know, and it was nice to me then. But
so let me ask you a question. I have all these little sidebars. Everybody wear a Jippy Japper hat.
Girls,
and you have quite a lot of children in the school. Is the peg, have your name on it, or you just know your hat?
Everybody knows where the peg belongs to. Okay, they were in rows, like first form, second form, and so on.
Ah.
So we would know whose hat. And your hat would have your name in the band or something.
Oh, I got
later
you.
Later
okay.
on, when we got bigger now, the Jippy Japper went out of style, and we got berries. You didn't need the hat room because your berry just folded up and put in your locker. So the hat rooms became classrooms and became library and became staff.
You mean you had a whole room just for hat?
Yeah, we had the hat
that
room.
Became a classroom afterwards?
Yeah, because my sixth form days at Manning's were in the old hat room.
Wow.
It was not a great big room, but the forms were small. For the first sixth form was five. And five people. And, of course, I should tell you, three of us got through the exams. So it was really something. But I think a boy long before my time, I remember his name was George Slowly, and I'm told that George prepared himself for the exam with the help of the staff, and he passed. But that is not on the records of the school in so much because he did it on his own. So I guess if they had been enterprising, they could have started a sixth form from that time. But I guess, but they didn't. But I understand that that boy did it. But there wasn't a sixth form until my time.
And what was his name?
I think his name was George Slowly.
Yes. I have some Slowlys in my family from Savlamar. I don't have
okay,
any.
Okay, that must be the same family.
On that. However, we never know. You know, people come by on the show, and I'll have to give a shout out here that if anyone knows about George Slowly's accomplishment at Manning's by taking the Cambridge exam.
I know it's true because I've heard it authenticated by older kids who were there before me, you know. But George wasn't there when the Prescotts went. He had left school long time. So whatever he did, but we all hear the story that he had done it. So I'm pretty sure it's true. Anyhow,
the four of you that took the advanced Cambridge was the first for Manning's.
First for Manning's. Five of us took it. And the two who didn't get through that year, they didn't fail by much because they took it the following year and they did get through. So, but the first, the four of us, the three of us, so three out of five, yeah. So we didn't do bad yet.
Are any of those people still alive and you're in touch with them?
Out of my group, one lives in Ocala. She's she was Dolores Allen, and we were talking on the phone the other day, and neither of us were sure if the third girl, who was Adassa Duhaney, we don't know. And last time I heard of her, she was in Kingston. I think she was teaching still, but we have just lost track of her. But the two boys have died. The two boys of our time have both died. So,
do you remember their name?
One was Orville Seaton.
Oh, I know that name.
Orville Seaton, and he was a brilliant boy. And the other Puzzles was Tomlinson. I'm trying to remember. What's his first
name? The reason I'm asking, because, you know, you never know descendants from different families. You know, what we're doing here this evening is going to be in the clouds forever.
Yeah,
you know, Google isn't going to go away. And when anyone Googles a name or perhaps about Mannings or about Negril or about Frome, you know, all sorts of things pop up. So that you never know. Sometime in the future, someone may be able to connect the story, because then whoever those people were, and they had a family, you know, that think they might have been told something by some of the generations. So what you're doing here is quite important and much appreciated. And I want to take a minute to remind our listeners on the computer, and both everybody calling in this evening, we have quite a few callers. I want to thank you for being here and to remind you that you're listening to Backyard Labrish on Blog Talk Radio. We are here each Wednesday at 8 o'clock, where we celebrate, enlighten, and preserve the rich, diverse culture of Jamaica, land we love. I am doing here is try to leave a living legacy from the people who lived the history of the 30s and 40s and even before. And I'm really, really thrilled to have Miss Jenny, as she's lovingly called, share with us this evening her wonderful memories. Because Miss Jenny, I don't know if I haven't been keeping track. I think I interviewed somebody's aunt Gloria or Aunt Gladys a couple of years ago. It could be last year. And she was 97, and she had memories of, you know, her parents. And it was so wonderful to have her share those memories with us. So, Miss Jenny, it's really delightful to hear you. You really sound like you're still enthused and passionate about life. So tell us a little bit about your personal family.
Oh, my family.
So let me just back up. So you graduated from Mannings, actually.
From Mannings, yes, actually. But listen, I would love to tell you something about hurricanes, because we just had Irene passing here, and I was so amazed that I could sit in this chair, look at the television, knew exactly where the hurricane is, where it's going, and all that. Now, let me tell you something. My mother could tell me, and I saw a little of it for myself. The only way they knew a hurricane was coming was when the fishermen, because all Negril men had a canoe and went out fishing. Some fished only for their family. Some fished enough to sell what they took out the family, and they sold the excess. But one, I'll just diverse to tell you this. Nobody in Negril went without what they call dinner fish. If there was a poor woman who had no husband, no son, or anybody, the fishermen made sure that she got fish for her dinner.
Wow.
Everybody, sometimes she got, that one would say, take this up to Miss Mary. Take this from Miss Mary. The fishermen saw to it that everybody, that was up to when I was a teenager, that was happening. But the fishing, now when the fishermen came in, the man would go to his wife or mother and say, look, weather coming. Now weather meant bad weather. They never spoke of weather if it's good weather, but when they use the term weather, you know it's bad weather. I don't know what signs they saw, but it was signs in the water like seagrass and seabirds, whatever. They knew what signs to read, maybe the clouds or what. But like 3-4 days before, they would tell you. And so they would take all the animals away from the lowlands. And there was a park named Orange Bay on Little Rising Ground. I think that's where they took the pigs and things to. But the families went to the church. Two churches on the two hills. And this I witnessed for myself. They're going up with the trays with food stuff and water and everything. They would go up the hill, and that's where they would stay for the duration of the hurricane. And when Mama was a little girl, that's how it was going too. And I think it was 1912 storm that the church roof went and the glasses flew out the window and something chopped her in her head, and there was no, in the darkness, they tied the children to each other and to the parents, and they found her by the big plot of hair, and the blood was in her head, and they grabbed her up. But that was how it was in those days. Then later on, with I am now sensible, a man telegram comes to the post office, or information comes by the telegraph, and the man who takes out the telegrams go around warning everybody, hurricane coming, hurricane coming. And, you know,
the
people would start. So we improved, you know.
Yes, yes, yes.
Then when we got radios now, well, the radio would tell you, and now everybody has television, so it's a vast difference.
Yes, but, and also the smartphone.
Mm-hmm. Everybody
that
has things.
Them too, yes. Great. That
well,
is some wonderful memories. And, you know, a lot of times I like to think or use incidents of the past that even relate to the now, because as you say, the technology now is so interesting, and you know, the whole world can instantly know something in a second after it happens because of the technology. But
look,
you think how difficult it was. You mentioned 1912. And I remember that is the year my mother was born,
my
in 1912. And that was the year of a hurricane. And she was born in Sablamar.
Mm-hmm.
And when I did the hurricane of 1912, and I read how some of the big ships were up on Great George Street.
Yes, because they said water was up to Hendon. That is, the sea came right in, and ships came in up Great George Street. I heard
right.
I heard all of that, yes.
So you can imagine a young woman giving birth in all of that going on around her. And I never knew my grandmother, but, you know, as you mentioned that, I had a flashback because that's the year my mother was born.
Oh,
I don't
yes.
know whether she was born the day or night, but I know if you said that they were warned, you know, way like 3 days before.
Yes, it's about 3-4
days. And I'm sure
that
people
that
were getting scared, and how traumatic it might have been
might
for
have
anybody
been.
That was
yeah,
ill or expecting a child.
You remember this? We didn't have the sort of services, medical services you have
now.
Oh,
no, yes, yes.
So,
and babies were delivered in the house with a midwife.
Delivery.
Yes.
Well, to be truthful, we didn't even have midwives at first. It was usually a grandmother or a woman who is experienced. She has been doing it for the village for years. So
right.
She's
well, she's
a midwife.
An unofficial midwife.
Yeah, that's it. Yes.
Yes, yes, yes. Or the medicine woman.
Something. But you know something? A lot of what they knew, I wish some of our nurses nowadays would know them. Because...
Right.
A woman can be in labor and the baby isn't coming and what. The midwife would know what bush to go and pick and boil and give her
right.
a tea, which encouraged the labor. That was lore that came down from Africa and India.
Yes,
which
yes, yes.
Nowadays they disregard it and nobody knows, you know. But
yes,
there
yes.
are a few
but
people.
A lot of people going back or trying
yes.
to go back.
Yes.
About the natural things.
Yeah, we
so,
need
to so tell us a little
more
bit more about your family. You
okay.
mentioned your son's going to Negril.
All right. My mother's family is from Negril. on her side, on her mother's side, all the grandparents were from there. But my grandmother's husband was not. He came from somewhere else. Then my father also came from somewhere else. But
you mean
like
another part of the island?
Same
or another
parish,
country?
Not a parish, but, well, for example, pardon me, my mother's father, I think they came from Hanover.
Uh-huh.
I think it's Hanover, but he, as a young man, he has a very interesting story. But he has
what
a young man.
What was his name? What was his name?
He was Bird, Edward Bird.
Okay.
His mother was a Rebecca Parbusing, and she was a little Indian lady, and she married a black man, and they had two children. But she couldn't cook the kind of food that the man wanted. He was a big, strong black man. And she only knew to cook rice and curry and vegetables. And he wanted yam and dumpling and so on. So this is how we interpret it. Yeah. And so they were getting along. And she took her baby and left him. Fortunately for her, she was rescued by a Presbyterian minister and his wife. So when they offered to take her home to her parents, she said, no, the parents would just take her back to the husband. So she stayed with them and the baby became like a grandchild for them, and she became. But when the man's term was up and he should go back to Scotland, they would have taken her, but she had no birth certificate, nothing.
Wow.
So they couldn't. So these people left them with a house and a little bit of land. So when Mr. Edward grew up, he sold the house and land, went to Negril, which had it was called Old Wharf. It had a wharf where ships would come in, and they bought logwood and turtle shells. It was a trading place, and copra and whatever. And so Negril was up and coming, so he went and he bought 25 acres down there. And that's how come my family now is there. On my mother's side, it's interesting because I don't really know much, because we left before I got curious enough to ask. But I know once my grandmother was at Daniels, and my grandfather, father was a Tate. No, great, not grand, great grand. And the story is, and I can only say it's a story, I don't know the facts, that Mr. Tate was either British, English, or Irish, and he was growing coffee and stuff like that. And Mr. Daniels was a Scotsman up in the hills rearing cattle and what have you. And, you know, people like to say they were married. Now, I'm not going to be a liar and say they were married, because I don't know and I don't think so. But I know Mr. Tate had children with a black woman, and Mr. Daniels had children with a black woman. So the child, one of the daughters of the Daniels set, married a son of the Tate set.
Uh-huh.
And those are the ones that had my great-grandmother, who was Eliza Daniels. She became Eliza Tate. So they gave birth to Lillian Tate. And Lillian Tate is marrying this Indian, half-Indian man from Timbuktu. I think it's Hanover Parish, I don't know. That set of children, and then my mother married another man from outside of her little village, because she married my father. And on his side, his father is supposed to have come to Jamaica on a whaling ship. That, again, I cannot...
From where? From what country?
India or wherever. The Indians were going all over, so he might have been on a whaling ship from Japan, for all I know. I really don't know. But he was on a whaling ship. And when he met, they had... Apparently the ship had something to do with India, because the Indians had some kind of entertainment, cooking and so forth, for the people on the ship, the owners or whoever they were. But the story is that the young ladies who serve the food, you know, they're not supposed to look at the men. They have to hold their heads down. But my grandfather saw this beautiful one, asked who she was, and they took him to her uncle. And he told the uncle he's coming back to marry her. Don't let her marry anybody else. Don't give her to anybody else. He didn't get back there until 3 years after. That's
and she was still available?
Of course, because I promised the man, you know.
Oh, I see. It was arranged.
It was a, yeah. And that was part of my story, as far as
but
I know.
You know, you're fortunate to have had so much, many stories shared with you.
Them. Yeah, because, you know, I was curious and I asked. So I'm sorry that I didn't get more information. Anyhow, we have a mountain range on the surveyor's map called Daniel's Mountain, and I'm pretty sure that Daniel's Mountain was named after my great-great-great-grandfather because he was a Daniel's, and that's the area he was in. So if I remained in Jamaica, I would have gone up there and found out about it, really. But I've seen a map with the Daniel's Mountain marked on it, a surveyor's map, so that there's obviously some truth in all of those legends. But then even if I meet my cousins, it's the same story that they got. So we know that there is grains of truth in it. But anyhow, school life was very simple. Actually, like us, we would get up. Mama had prayers and we ran across the beach and bathed in the sea and took soap and towels and bathed in the river and then came back up to have breakfast, straighten up whatever little duties we had to do, and then go to school.
And what was for breakfast?
Breakfast, usually porridge, whether oats or grated corn, not corn meal. They dry the corn.
I know about that.
Or banana porridge.
Uh-huh.
So it was
banana porridge, one of my favorites.
Porridge, or sometimes we'd have roasted breadfruit fried with a fish, or just egg and bread or something like that. But and then, of course, chocolate.
Uh-huh. Chocolate tea, as
chocolate.
We call it.
Yep. Or we had bush tea, which would be wild parsley or mint. You know, all these things grow around the house. So
yes, you just go out and pick it.
If you had a cough or a cold, it would be susumba. Susumba.
Really?
Yeah. You know susumba with the little...
I know the little
jolly beans.
Like mini grapes.
Yeah, well, the leaf of that is a very good bush for colds. So some families, they just drink it all the time, you know, but we had it like a medicine. But if you had a cold, mix it and sweeten it with condensed milk and so on. And we got that for tea, too.
Nice. Let me just ask you, I'm going to ask if anyone on the board would like to ask you a question or relate to something you have said or know about the area to really put up, hit one on your telephone. I see a hand going up right away, so I'm going to open up the mic to 718-379. Good evening. You're in the backyard with Miss Jenny and
Leigh.
Margaret.
This is Leigh from the rainy Bronx.
Oh, welcome.
Yes, a lot of things Miss Jenny said that I relate to.
Huh?
Number one was I have a place in Trelawney, and whenever I go down to Trelawney, all the boys sort of get together. Now, I didn't know too many people there, as it were, but at this one particular house, this fella that I met knows everybody who is anybody. And you mentioned Mouchette before.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And he is this is probably the son of the gentleman you mentioned. And
yeah,
he would come all the time. You know, it usually ends up from a lobster fest to a drinking party.
Okay. That could be a grandson, if anything.
Yeah, or whatever.
So, the Mouchette must be descended from that Mouchette. You know,
yes.
The name is unusual.
I know
they have descendants.
Was English and everything, all that stuff. And the point I was trying to make is that they were about to make a highway from Montego Bay to Ocho Rios.
Uh-huh.
And this fella Mouchette was outside of himself because he said that the highway is going to cross his property three times in different places.
Wow.
So he said this would be an opportunity for him to set up, you know, like we have here, Howard Johnson's or wherever on the highway. He had that figured out, you know. So that was one thing. The second thing I wanted to ask you was, back in the grill, did you know the Arthur's family?
Of course. They're holding their family home. It's called Barossa.
Yes.
On the beach, and there are some of them still there.
Yes.
They have a bathing beach, and I think they have a club and something. But
They were the only holdouts after the hotels came.
Yes.
To hold on to their property.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's correct. Yes, they're still there. Uh-huh.
Yes. The husband and wife died, but I think one of the younger ones.
Yes,
yes.
They're there. Mm-hmm.
But the other thing I wanted to ask in relation to Negril was, I remember having like a brunch breakfast at the Arthur's house, and a woman passed up and she looked like Margaret's mother. You know, looked like a relative. And he pointed her out to me before, because he said, before we leave this table, a Nunes would pass by. My last name is Nunes.
Uh-huh.
I don't know if you knew any of the Nuneses.
I knew Fred. There was a Fred. You knew Fred?
No, I don't know them.
There's a Fred Nunes and his sister.
Yes.
Oh, God. I don't know her first name. I always called her Miss Nunes.
Yeah.
But, yes, she was very good friends with my father and mother.
No
she
kidding.
She actually moved to Frome and had a little restaurant.
Ah, so... And they're mm-hmm. They were from the Point.
From Negril. They were on the west end, this direction going to the lighthouse, which
yes,
was the
exactly
south Negril
right.
Point. Yes.
Exactly that's, right.
That's the direction they came from.
Both Leigh from the Bronx and Margaret from Atlanta are descendants of the Nunes, too.
Yeah, that's fantastic, yes.
Isn't that so? This is a small world.
I didn't know the father and mother, but I knew Fred and I knew Miss Nunes. She was the older of the two. And then she moved to Frome and had a little restaurant. That's when I really knew her. Because as a schoolgirl, I could always stop by Miss Nunes for a glass of water, but I would get a little treat like a tart or a grater cake or something.
Yes. Well, you know, it's funny how the world becomes so small. But as you said in the past, and we all say, we should have asked our parents and grandparents a lot more questions than we did.
Yes, it didn't occur to us. So good.
And in the old days, you really didn't have this as a child, as a youngster. You didn't speak too much to your parents.
No, you didn't. That's really true.
Yes,
no,
I may remind you, the saying was a child should be seen and not heard.
That's right.
Did anyone remember that, hearing that?
Yes.
Of course.
This was an unfortunate thing, you know?
Yes, yes, yes. Well, we're trying to make that right now.
Yes.
So that's why I ask so many questions now. And I really, really appreciate the seniors who respond and is supportive. Because now as we look back, we wish we had asked more questions and we were entertained in asking questions instead of telling to leave the room or something.
Zach, you know, one other thing, a comment that I wanted to make, you mentioned Harvest. Now, I didn't know too much about Harvest until my grandmother, who was from Bethel Town, Westmoreland,
mm-hmm.
She lived in Kingston, where we lived as children, and she used to go to a little Presbyterian church close by, and they had Harvest.
Yeah.
And so I became familiar with how it worked
Harvest.
In the country.
Yes. Yes.
I went back to Highgate in St. Mary and saw them doing the same thing that you
mm-hmm.
mentioned, you know,
it's really
all over
nice.
The island.
All over the island. That gets a kind
one
of...
One last thing. I don't want to hold you up too much, but you mentioned Tate and Lyle.
Uh-huh.
I, in New York here, the way fate works, I work for Tate and Lyle.
Uh-huh.
And I wrote an article, having known Tate and Lyle existed from Jamaica.
Mm-hmm.
People in my company, Domino Sugar, didn't know the first thing about Tate and Lyle when they took over Domino Sugar.
Oh, so dear.
I wrote an article, sent it to England, and they published it.
Oh, great.
Wow, I didn't even know that, Mr.
That's
Lake.
Great.
Well, you know, it only goes to show you that Jamaica was... I played up the Jamaica part because the Tate and Lyle, we know of Tate and Lyle way back.
In Jamaica, yes.
As you said. And so all the processes that you mentioned before, the sugar processes, I'm very familiar with it.
Oh, yes.
Okay.
Having worked on Domino Sugar, isn't this interesting?
Yes.
Thank you, yes.
Yeah, very nice to hear you.
Oh.
Yes, and Miss Jenny, you sound so young and vibrant.
Oh.
Very vibrant.
You know something?
And that's wonderful to know. And I really hope that you will come back often and share with us. But you want to tell us a little bit about your career? We still have a couple more minutes.
Okay.
And if there anyone else on the board would like to interact with Miss Jenny, just hit one on your telephone. And that will indicate to me that you want to speak with us. So feel free, because this is what Alabrish is all about.
Yep.
And we'd love to hear your voice and hear your comment. So just hit one on your telephone if you want to talk to us. So back to you, Miss Jenny.
Okay. Sort of vivid memory of when we went to Frome. There had been a riot before. My father knows about that. You know, labor riots. And that was when Mr. Bustamante came on the fore. Apparently, the wages and the living conditions for the construction workers weren't really good. But there was a big riot, and I think one or two people got hurt. Somebody was killed and so on. And Bustamante, that was where he made his name. He came in and defended
yes,
the people
yes.
and so on. And when we went to school, there was a man who couldn't work because he had got a bullet in his ankle. So he was like, you know, everybody wants to look at him and that sort of thing. But I didn't know anything about that. But it was a war. That was
uh-huh.
one memory of mine. The evening, and when it was a bulletin that came around. I know there was a lot of talk going on about Hitler and Germany, but of course we weren't concerned. But I remember the evening when England and whoever went into the war, and a bulletin came around right through Jamaica telling us that we were at war. And it was such a striking thing that I scribbled a little kind of poem.
First of all, where were you? What city were you when
I was
you
in Frome at that time. I was actually, we had moved to Frome and were there some months, maybe nearly a year or so, because when this thing happened. And I was already at George Plain School, and I know all the warriors. And at Frome, we had area shelters and we had practices. Mm-hmm. And man, when they blew the siren at the factory, we had to run under these things, and they had bottles of water. We had, but you couldn't make any light under there. If you had a flashlight,
I remember that.
Just like a real Aryan, but we never had any Aryans in Jamaica. But it was exciting, you know. And we had blackouts too. They blew the thing, and we turned off all the lights, and you're in darkness because, of course, you're thinking about planes coming over, bombing. Now the population at Frome. We had Fontabelle, which was a previous estate, but it was developed for the English workers who were coming. So Fontabelle became like a little township by itself, and the heads of departments lived there. And I remember the trees, they planted Ponciana trees and hedges. We had beautiful hedges at Frome. And then we had, like, where we lived, it was like 9 family homes, and 9 Jamaican heads of thing lived there, because there was a Mr. McGregor. He was in the machinery department. Daddy was in the sugar part. Somebody else was in the electrical part, things like that.
Was he a Claude McGregor? Was it Claude? You remember the name?
Who?
Claude McGregor.
No, that Mr. McGregor, I don't know the father's first name, but the children were Ida, Lynette, Levi, and Doris. Those were the children. I don't know the parents' first name. Levi is now the manager of the factory at Long Pond in Trelawney. The daughters are different. I know one dad, she was doing training to be a teacher, and something with her appendix and something. But the others are still alive and working. And a lot of people who are there are in Canada or in England. That's, you know, Jamaican people seem to walk all over the world. They travel a lot.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Anyhow, back to the war.
The war. You want me to read that little thing that I made?
Yes, you wrote something, you said.
Yes, I wrote something because it was the first really astonishing thing to me. All right, I said, it was an evening in September. I remember. We were at the supper table in that quiet, peaceful evening. Grace had been said. Mama was serving. Pass your plate, she said. War! 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 The words fell through the window into the quiet room like single stones flung violently into a placid pool. War! 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 Came nearer, red-hot bullets shattering the peace in our quiet dining room. Daddy jumped up, shouting as he rushed through the door. We were frightened, confused. We did not understand. Mother stood up, a spoon in her hand. Her eyes were closed. Her lips moved in silent prayer. My father returned with a sheet of newsprint in his hand, eyes huge, lips a thin line in his ashen face. Huge, bold, black letters on the pale gray paper said, "War, war, the whole world is at war." That's it.
Wow.
That was the beginning.
That is something else. And do you remember how old you were when you wrote that?
No, I didn't write it when I was at that age. I wrote it when I was at school, when I was about 17 or so. And we were asked to discuss, think of something,
but
a memory.
It was vivid in your mind.
Yeah, and so I've kept it, you know. I have a lot of little poems
that's
like that.
Beautiful. So let me ask you something. How did the flyer or whatever you got the information on arrive to you? How did you get it?
Apparently, they had sent special cars with them to distribute throughout the island, because a normal gleaner comes like 11, 12 o'clock, leaves Kingston like 2 o'clock in the morning. So this must have left Kingston like 10 o'clock or so. As soon as they got the news, they made the bulletins and shipped them out. So ours just reached Westmoreland at that time. It was like 5, 6 o'clock in the evening.
And who delivered it?
After that, now we went into high gear for war. They built these air raid shelters. We had practices for blockouts. Our bread. One time now, there's shortage of flour. So they had to put a quarter pound of cornmeal at the end of each bread. No, they were mixing the cornmeal with the flour, but people didn't like it. But in order to make the ration, they had to put a lump of cornmeal at the bottom of the bread so the bread weighed whatever it was to weigh. So the people could just take off a lump of cornmeal and still enjoy their bread. I remember that.
Because it didn't happen. There wasn't enough flour on the island, which
right.
was imported.
That was it. And school books were in short supply. A lot of things came in short supply. But, for example, you used to get butter from England,
uh-huh.
Nestle's butter.
Uh-huh.
And we couldn't get butter regularly. So local farmers started making butter. And we got extremely good butter, which continued after the war.
Yes.
And there were several things developed out of that war, like the rice mills. People started setting up rice mills and milling the rice so that we had local rice instead of having to buy foreign rice. We didn't have those words in those days, you know. That's a
right.
shop, right? And so on. Uh-huh.
Now, do you remember the ration book? Did you in the country get a ration book during the war? That
I
you could only
know.
Buy a certain amount of things?
Not us.
Oh, because I remember that in Kingston. I don't know if anybody
would remember
that. It
could have happened in Kingston, but it
didn't
happen in the country, no.
Yeah, because no matter how much money you had, you can only get so much milk or whatever was imported that's short supply.
Okay. Well, even if that was happening, we had cows in the country, and I remember people could hardly get salted codfish, and so we started corning, we call it, salting down grouper and some other kind of big fish. And so we didn't miss the salted codfish because people could not.
Isn't that something?
Yeah, we did that. I remember that, you know. So
Yes. So do you remember when the war was over?
When the war was over, 1945, it didn't affect me very much because I was still in school, yes, but it wasn't any big thing, as it were. We didn't have any celebration as such. Everybody was glad, you know, and the people, men who had gone, had come back home. It was seeing these people coming home, which was individual, like at the church. When they came home, they would be at the church and they would have a welcome and that sort of thing. And prayers and so on. In those days, most everything tied up with your church life. You know,
Yes. Well, just before we go, we have a couple of more minutes. If anyone on the board would like to interact with Miss Jenny or make a comment or a suggestion for any upcoming show, please feel free to hit one on your telephone. I want to thank you all for being here, those on the board and those listening online. I hope you will come often and stay as long as you're staying. So do give me some feedback and let me know what you'd like us to elaborate about because, you know, we want to lead. I want to make a comment about Excelsior's founder because, you know, on the couple of schools that I've discussed before, which has been Manning's, St. George's and Kingston College. There was quite a bit of information about the founder, you know, in all three cases.
Yes.
But I could not find a lot of information
on
about
Mr. Powell.
I think
the school started by the old father, Samuel Powell. And then they were
here it was the brainchild of A.W. Powell.
That's the son, and he went away to Columbia and got his degrees and so on. But I understand that it was a father was a principal in the country somewhere, and that
it was his idea.
But I can't really swear to any of that because when I went there, the son was still at school in America. He came back in my first year there. That was A.W. Powell. Aston.
A.W., okay. Mm-hmm. Well, the documentation I have here just says that it excelled to high school because actually they said here it starts out as a school. The original Powell had the vision that from 3 to 100 people should be always be learning.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, he says from birth to death, you should always be in a period of learning. And I thought that was quite interesting.
I think I'm carrying that out to the...
That's,
you know,
wonderful, Miss Jenny.
Every night I have a Spanish course, and the last thing I do, turn it on, is one of these that speak as you learn. So I'm doing that now. I also have, you know, Nightingale Conant. I get a course from them every now and then. Yeah, and we have a little newsletter here, which six of us run the newsletter.
We just have a few seconds left, so I wanted to thank everybody for being online.
Okay.
And Miss Jenny, you'll have to come back and tell us some more stories.
Okay.
And we're
my
officially
pleasure.
Off the air now, but we're still streaming. I think, no, we have a couple seconds left. So I really appreciate all the wonderful nuggets of wisdom that you've given us and stories of the past. And I always like to encourage my listeners to share with the next generation. And one great way of sharing with the whole world is by being a guest on Backyard Labrish.
Yes,
so I hope that some of our callers will consider that, or if you know of someone who would like to share their stories with us, do let me know. And we have a website, so you can go visit our website and leave us a comment or be on our mailing list so that we can inform you of our upcoming shows.
Okay.
So, Miss Jenny, I really appreciate your input this evening. Thank you for being our guest, and thank everyone that has participated. Mr. Carl in the background, thank you for tuning in. And Mr. Lay from the Bronx, thank you very much. And Miss Jenny, I hope you'll come back soon. And as
whenever.
I always ask my listeners, to make it a great week. Thank you very much for being here, and good night.
Thank you, and good night. Okay.
Bye-bye.